Like, this is the Nickelback of elections. That's what this is. Everybody's like, we hate Nickelback. Well, how they keep winning? You know what I mean? Like, this is
making albums.
Yeah, they have hits. They have top 40 hits. Somebody's asking, requesting more music from them. Everybody lying.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. Off the record, off the record. Yeah. I'm putting on for the record. Y'all been waiting for a minute.
Check one, check two. Ladies and gentlemen, it is I and it is us. This is Off the Record. My name is Adon Bean. I'm joined by familiar faces that you all have come to know. From my left, all the way around, what is up, Dan Duncan? How are you, sir?
Good, man.
Yeah?
It was one of those days where I just lived in my head all day long.
Yes. Yes. Did your head have a polling place? Was there?
The pollsters were outside waiting for me to say.
Exit interviews.
Yeah, exactly. And I had very varying answers every time I came out of my own head.
Understandably so. Man, also, David Perdue.
What's happening?
Hey, man.
Was I on the last one? I can't remember.
It was a long time since the last one. Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway, I'm happy to be on this one.
Hey, well, yeah. happy
we're
that
still
you,
here.
We still here. We still here. One day down.
The sun came up and, you know.
Yeah.
I think, I didn't go.
You know who's not here, though?
Who's not here?
Show Baraka is
this
not here.
Dude, man.
Did something happen to him?
Did he rapture?
Who knows?
Maybe. I think he on the cabinet. He getting ready.
Show dropped his album and just was like, you know what?
I'm too good for this.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I basically only needed four just to get my record straight.
My record out.
Get that out.
Good thing it took him 4 years to release it.
We laugh at our friend. Yeah. But no, man, it's just three of us today. With recent events and whatnot, we figured it would just be an amazing time to get together and, talk, get everyone's ideas, what they're thinking. But we also just want to check up because it's been a minute. David Perdue, what you been up to?
Man, last Friday I was on TV.
Oh, yeah, that's right. On Fuse.
I was on Fuse.
Yeah.
They let me get more time than Comedy Central.
Word.
They still cut me, though. They cut me. I feel like I feel like TV don't want me to talk about white people. It's twice. I'm like, all right. I know the face. Like, you don't believe it, but it works. And but it was still a cool experience. But yeah, they definitely cut. Like, as soon as I got done, I was like, oh, I still got. Like, if I ever have to get back on again,
yeah,
I still got bitch y'all ain't see.
There you go.
I'm trying to be very positive today. Man, so, yeah, I'm trying to be very positive. But anyway, that was a dope experience. Shout out to anybody and everybody that watched. If you have the channel, I think it's online too. I think they show whole episodes online. Fuse TV, uproarious. So appreciate y'all checking that out.
Yeah. That is what's up. Dan Duncan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Spent the weekend up in New York.
Word.
Which was super fun. Man, I love that city. It's like me and my wife, just we walked 13 miles one day. And then we can just walk, and it's just, man, I just get so much inspiration from the people there and like the different cultures, like from Jamaica, Queens, like over to Brooklyn. And I mean, even in Manhattan, just different places, taking it all in. I thought it was super funny though, because like I like tweeted out something about being in Williamsburg.
Yeah.
And Show was like, I don't think you want to be there. I'm like, Show, I'm pretty sure then you haven't been to New York in like, like 10
Williamsburg
years, bro.
Is where you want to be.
It is popping.
I'm about to say, I feel like that's every comedian lives in Williamsburg.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is essentially home of Lena Dunham's Girls. Like, yeah. Show, like it is the white hipster home of.
That's the reason why I know what
felt,
it is.
I felt very comfortable
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no, it's very, very. What's interesting is all the people from Brooklyn, other parts of Brooklyn, all talk about how like Williamsburg is strangely not inaccessible, but it's strangely not easily accessible by other parts of Brooklyn. So like if you're in Crown Heights or if you're in, Flatbush or whatever, it's just like, you kind of just still have to go out of the way to get to Williamsburg. But yeah, it's that's funny. Show's like acting like you were like on Trinity and Prospect in the blocks and some stuff.
I think he was worried about me. I'm like,
get out of there, man. Get out of there.
It's cold.
Good, man. I got my jeans rolled up and I'm riding a bike. Like, I'm fine, bro.
How many mayonnaise shops did you see?
I drank some coffee.
No, that's what's up. It continues, though, a longstanding tradition of the rest of the fourth team finding out where Dan is.
That
via
is fun.
Instagram. Like, we literally log in and just be like, where'd Dan go?
I just saw him.
I just got done recording. I just left the spot. And, yeah.
So, just to clear the record, since we are on Off the Record, my wife travels every week.
Yeah.
We have basically an unlimited amount of Sky Miles. Hey. I'm not rich. Let me just put it out there in the ether.
Oh, no. I think it's just cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's dope. Yeah. Because you'll like make it was like, wait, he was like, it's just like he was just here.
Literally. I was just standing next to this dude. And lo and behold,
he has
caught a flight somewhere. So, yeah, it's definitely dope.
What about you, sir?
I've been good. What'd I do? I performed a couple nights ago. At a spot at, you know, the longstanding Apache Cafe featured there Sunday for the Word Is Born series show. And David definitely came out to some, they got to see a bit of what the world can be.
Yeah.
Of what the world can be.
I saw all the snaps,
it's
by the way.
It's ups and downs. It's everything, man. Yeah. That's what makes it beautiful, man. Like, any given night, you're guaranteed to get anything, on that stage. And so
you was dope, man.
Hey,
that was my third time seeing you perform. Time was at the other time was when you buried me at that Kanye thing that I had you on.
I forgot about that.
I tried to
I try to like tell people, like, if Don's gonna come out, he's going to bury anyone.
I told Sho on his album, I said, you sure you want, when I heard your verse, I got worried, man. I got worried. I was like, that verse, you was dope in the first one. I was like, you want to do this? You want to start with this? Yeah.
Appreciate it. But it was a lot of fun. It was just, a lot of people came out and supported us, so that's cool. I'm actually gonna be back there at the end of this month, hosting a poetry verse hip hop showcase, where in which I'm kind of the head of I'm hosting with a friend, Queen Sheba, who's really well renowned spoken word poet, been everywhere, and I'm kind of in charge of like the hip hop squad. So I kind of picked 5 MCs and we just kind of go back and forth. Like, she brings poets up, I bring MCs, and we kind of battle and see who wins. And we're actually in the process of we're recording footage that night, so we're pitching it to BET, so it should be some interesting things coming
like
up
it.
With that. So
that's a dope concept. When I saw that, yeah, that'd be dope.
Yeah. So it should be cool. November 29th, if you are in the Atlanta area or Georgia area, definitely come through. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Do
so
it.
Yeah, man. But but other than that, man, I mean, man, have y'all been like, there are certainly things that have been happening in the world.
No.
Believe you me.
Stay with us.
But until we get to there, I'm curious, like, let's say this Saturday coming up, if you were not paying attention to the most recent events in this world, what might you be seeing around, let's say, 11:30 Eastern Standard Time on this coming Saturday?
Oh, man.
This coming Saturday night, David Perdue.
The king is returned. Listen, Chappelle is
here. The champ is here.
The champ is here.
Do you think he knew, like, hey, the world's going to need me?
Oh, it's almost like he's Ja Rule from his bit about where's Ja. It's like, that's how bad things, but like we do need Chappelle. Like,
Dave,
he's
makes
the only
sense
one.
Of all this.
I cannot wait for this monologue. It's going to, like, I'm tempted to like hit people up who I know in New York who are like around him.
Yeah. Because
I know he's working it out right now to kind of get like that sneak. Like, what's he about to, but I already know that it's about to be some of the greatest TV ever. Like, I feel like at the end he's like, and Chappelle season 4 is coming. Like, he has
you just
to.
Got all these. So my thing is this, though. Like, so do you think that it will be, do you think it'll be saddled with too much expectation? Because
yes.
He's not been on TV.
Yeah.
in a very, very long time.
He's a performer, man.
I'm not saying he's not a great performer. I'm not saying that it's not going to be funny. I'm just saying.
Oh, the expectation is way too high. Right. Like, I mean, I'm literally expecting to, like, have every, I'm expecting to laugh harder than I ever laugh, to also cry somehow, to like I'm expecting all of my emotions.
All in like a 6 minute monologue.
Yeah, in a 6 minute monologue. And then I'm gonna remember, oh, he has to do sketches. Like, I'm like, just let him, like, honestly, SNL, if you really wanna win people, give him that 2 hours. He's done 6 hours on stage before.
Absolutely.
How do I know this? I've watched it all. He's done Somebody six. Recorded yeah. it one time. Yeah. I watched 6 hours of Chappelle just talking.
Yeah.
I watched it. Loving it. Yeah, I know. Dan's losing his mind right now.
What?
Yeah. And people will sit. They will stay. That's how amazing he is.
Because I've seen him live now twice.
Oh, and you're so lucky.
And they were very, you know, they were more controlled, right? But like those 6 hour shows, they're like the Hollywood.
Like Hollywood improv, maybe?
Improv. Like, and it's literally, they, you know, they give him the keys to it. They're just like, hey, like.
Here you go.
You got it. And the thing about Dave Chappelle is like his stand up is so conversational, mm-hmm. that you'll just be like, you're just paying attention to the stories and he's like whittling around and you don't see the joke coming. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but he's done long sets. Yeah.
So like, just give SNL, do not send, I don't know who's on this season. I love Leslie Jones. Don't send out there to do some sketch. Just let him do stand up for an hour and a half.
So here's the other thing that I have concerns about. Do you think, cause I think like the other thing that people saw with the idea of Chappelle coming on the show, mm-hmm. is they're just like, oh, we about to get, like, this is going to be the Chappelle show now.
Okay.
But there are not the same writers.
Well, here's the thing SNL will do, mm-hmm. if they bring certain people on. You'll bring your writers.
Okay.
Like, I remember Jamie Foxx, when he did it, he brought writers.
Okay.
Like, certain people will be like, y'all not going to mess me up.
Okay.
Normally it's black people. When black people get on, they will bring people to be like, and I don't have time to go back and forth with you about what this means.
Gotcha.
I got to bring my team in. Okay. However, his team was Neil Brennan. And,
right.
And I don't know what Neil Brennan's up to now.
And I don't know. Are they even talking?
I think, no.
They've reconciled?
They're okay.
Okay.
They're okay enough for, I feel like Neil to be like, yeah, I'll do SNL. You know what I mean? Like, I'll make that work.
Yeah.
But is Neil going to... He's got to, right? Like, if you're Neil Brennan, you sign up for this. You do it for the people. Do it for the culture, Neil.
Man.
Do it for the culture.
Man.
I'm very excited. If you don't know, I'm in Atlanta, I run a show at Smith's Old Bar. It starts at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I have to be there earlier. I might not even be in my own show just to watch all of Chappelle. Like, that's how important this is to me. Yeah, I could DVR it, but I want to watch Saturday night live. I don't want to record it. I want to see it as it's happening.
Man, it's interesting because, you know, he's not the only person returning to Saturday Night, you know, if you even want to call it a return to Saturday Night Live, but there is a little known group called A Tribe Called Quest.
Part of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just once or twice.
Yeah. And they are they are the musical guests because apparently, principal member Fife Dawg passed earlier this year with complications due to diabetes. But what had not been talked about and what was not let out until recently is that they had been working on a secret album that is coming out next week, I think. I could be wrong. It might be coming out this Friday, actually.
Probably
November 10th, and then Saturday Night. Like, yeah, I think it's coming out. Anyway, but the album, they've been recording in secret, and it features everyone from, you know, longstanding members like Busta and I think Consequences partly involved. But of course, they got Talib, they got Kendrick Lamar's on the record, Jack White's on the record, Andre 3000's on the record, like all these things that, like, it was interesting because around the time that they had like a memorial for Fife at Showtime at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and then there was all this footage that kind of came out of just showing like pictures of like them all in a studio kind of talking and stuff like that, and I think actually Chris Rock was there, and Chris Rock posted a photo of all of them and said, oh, we working on Andre's new album, Andre 3000's album. Mm-hmm. And so all these people were just like, oh, this is crazy. Yeah. Turns out, nah, they was actually working on Tribe's album.
How do we know they're not working on both?
We don't know. But
I feel like Chris Rock would know.
Yeah.
I definitely think Chris Rock would know. But, now, my question to you is,
yeah,
the expectations for this,
man,
can they reach expectations?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
Not at all.
It's tough.
Not at all. But it's, you know, so Chappelle's missing Neil Brennan. we are missing. We're missing Fife.
Yeah.
And so it's just not going to be the same there. But, you know, it's really up with, like, the album itself. Like, I'm really interested to hear this record, man. And so, yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait. It's an extra Black Saturday Night Live reason because they just followed
they
up
just
with
got Solange.
Solange,
yeah.
Solange was just there saying, do not touch my hair.
Right.
Okay. It's crazy. But, Saturday Night Live.
I have no doubt that nostalgia will carry you both through the moment, even if it is... fall short.
Oh, I'm gonna have a great, like, Chappelle can do no wrong to me. I don't even understand. Like, he's one of, I said this to people, I've met people in comedy who are like huge.
Yeah.
If I ever met, like, he's one, if I met him, I know that I would cry. Like, I know that I would cry. And I would, I'm like, look, I knew I was, it would be like a, like three tears, two out the left, one out the right. And I, he would be like, what are you doing, man? And I'd be like, man, I just knew this was going to happen if this ever happened.
Yeah, yeah.
If so the past 24 hours have proven anything to me, it's rose colored glasses can paint even the shittiest situations and people can be cheering for them. So,
man, there it is. There it is. Speaking of, actually, I don't even have a segue for that. but no, have y'all been watching anything? Y'all been up on anything?
Dude, we were recording 4th and 10 while the election was, while they were counting votes. And we found out literally while we were recording 4th and 10. And I have not stopped watching coverage, Twitter. I just can't peel myself away. I think partly just the historicity of the moment, and just the total shock that is, it's kind of sending through the country. It's something, it's like watching a car accident that you can't turn it off.
Yeah.
Huh. I still don't know. I remember my first thought, and this is going, I'm going to say a lot of stuff probably this podcast that's not the most filtered.
Sure.
I'm
perfect.
Pretty sure that that's
what I mean is, like, I haven't thought it out, but I remember my first thought was, white people just murdered America. Like, you just murdered America, white people. You just murdered America, you know? And I was like, how? And, like, I think I said it before we even, like, we recorded this. Like, this is, Trump is the Nickelback of candidates. Meaning, everybody say they hate him.
Okay.
Everybody said they hate him.
Yeah, yeah.
But he just went platinum. You know what I mean? He got hits.
Yeah. Yeah,
that people really enjoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
And got behind. And it's one of those things to say that I'm surprised. I guess for whatever reason I am surprised. And I feel like I shouldn't have been.
No, it's all
good. Just like that. It's like that Chris Rock has this bit about, like, you better learn about white folks and rules. Mm. When he starts talking about that, and he starts has this bit about, like, you can't trust people. He's like, even if I'm on Regis filming, I'm on Regis and Kelly, and Regis hop out and start stabbing me. He's like, I got you, nigga, I got you, and start stabbing him. He's Chris Rock's like, I should have known.
Got you.
I should have known.
He still got you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you never, man.
The kind of commentator, activist, Jace Moody, he kind of talks about how, like, to be, you know, particularly he talks about to be black in this country is to be kind of in a, I think he described it as a Sisyphus mix between being shocked but not surprised, or being surprised but not shocked.
Surprised but not shocked.
Like you can constantly be in this place of just being like, I can't believe this happened. I can believe this happened. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised this happened. You know, just constantly vacillating between those two things. So, yeah.
I'm still at a loss. I'm at a loss of words. I look at it like there's a couple things. These are the main things going through my head. What was the total number of his votes now that we know, like,
as far as popular vote? He lost by
Total number of votes.
2 million votes or something like
No, his total is the total number.
I don't know that offhand.
It's 50 something million, whatever it is. All I'll say is this. We talked about it earlier. There was a discussion prior to the election about the unknown voter, or like the polls not adding up, and people were like,
the secret voter,
right? Mm-hmm. And everybody thought it was nothing. And I remember thinking, like, I know y'all posters didn't go in them deep woods. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To get this information. Mm-hmm. And it's, but also know that, like, I can't help shaking the idea that there were people who did not want to appear racist. So they were like, I ain't voting for Trump, but got in that booth and was like, they can't get me now, and put that Trump on there. And then, and then come back and we'll smile in all of our faces and be like, I can't believe this happened, man.
So I want to, not to jump in too seriously, but I want to push on that a little bit, because on one hand, I've gotten text messages and tweets all day long from both sides of this thing, people cheering, people crying, and kind of the two extremes, and I'm thankful. I became I was in this very weird place today that I was very thankful that I have both extremes in my life. It confirmed to me that I'm not necessarily surrounding myself with one narrative, which I think is a blessing that a lot of people can't necessarily claim. But David, what you just said, because I understand why you said what you just said. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this mentality of not wanting to appear racist, and then in fact voting for Trump. I think that there's this caricature of Trump voters, which I do think that there's this kind of secret voter, this potentially ashamed voter, that I think the only person who really knew that it existed was Trump, and I think that he knew it so wholeheartedly that he spoke to that person for the last 18 months. And we all thought he was crazy. We all mocked him. We all told him that he's going to lose. I said on my political podcast that it was going to be a historic beatdown, that Hillary Clinton was literally going to wipe the floor with him. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Mm-hmm. But I say all that to say, I don't think that the majority of people that voted for Trump, I honestly believe that they didn't say, I don't want to appear racist and then get in the booth and say, okay, I have autonomy to be free now, to be the racist version of myself. I think that that's a caricature. Mm-hmm. And I think that that person does exist. Mm-hmm. And I think that the overt racist does exist. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That has been proven. The KKK endorsed this candidate. Right. I'm not taking away the racist nature of this candidate or the racist nature of the last 18 months that we've all suffered through. But what I am saying is that I do think that the majority of Trump voters in this country, they didn't go in. They went into that voter booth with very similar struggles that I had, where I was looking at a Supreme Court that I wanted to be conservative. I was looking at a healthcare plan that I didn't agree with and I felt was flawed from the beginning. Not because I don't think that there's a problem that should be solved, but I felt like the solution was broken from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at these key, singular issues, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was this, especially for white voters of privilege, there's this fork in the road where you have to make a decision right then and there. Are you going to become a singular issue voter, mm-hmm. gay marriage, Supreme Court, Obamacare, so on and so forth? Or are you going to say, look, becoming a singular voter would potentially hurt others in the process, and I need to take into account others in my vote? And then you generally either went third party or Hillary Clinton at that point in time. And and I voted for Gary Johnson. We'll just put it out there. Mm-hmm. And some people have told me that because I did that, I helped Trump get elected. Trump was going to win Georgia regardless.
Yeah, right.
So, and I live in a state that was going to be red no matter how hard I tried to scream. So, but I said all to say, I want to be careful on this podcast to not ostracize people who look like me, and to say and to play into the caricature that just because you voted for Trump, you are inherently racist.
Yeah, no. And let me be very clear. I'm not. I remember talking to my dad earlier today about having a. I think part of the problem with this whole election is the left not engaging people, and the right saying, we'll go find those people who felt like they've not been engaged. And so I say that to say, I don't think I had. I remember I had to have a real moment maybe a couple months ago. I went to a grocery store and I saw a truck that had a Trump sticker, and it was a small grocery store. And I was like, I'm gonna find this dude. I know I'm gonna be able to be easily point out who this dude is. Right. Went in there, sure enough, see this dude. And I was like, we got done the same time, and I was like, I guarantee he goes to this truck. He did go to that truck, right? Mm. Then there was a moment where I forgot what happened exactly. Either I dropped something or something, and he helped me, smiled, laughed, made a joke, whatever. And it was something that small, but I was just like, I would have pegged him to not do any of those things, and then he did it. And then it kind of woke me up. It's like, racist? Probably not. Probably not overtly, you know what I mean? Mm. Overtly racist. Here's my issue. To vote for a man who was endorsed by the Klan and then never rejected that endorsement. Mm-hmm. He never once, even he just played, I don't know who David Duke is. Okay, well, we told you who he is. Now what do you do? He never once rejected that. Mm-hmm. To vote for a man who, I mean, literally said the worst things that you can say about women, about, you know, all these different groups of people. And then to say, oh, but I want him to, he's going to be the leader of it. Like, and not to not, so maybe you're not quote unquote what we think is racist, but you sided with a racist. So maybe I won't call you a racist, but you, all I know is there are Klansmen who are happy today with your vote. So what am I supposed to call that?
Absolutely. And you have full right to push back on what I'm saying. Yeah. For me, this is still a fluid.
Like, I'm saying there's nuances to racism. Yeah, that's, yeah, yeah. I'm agreeing there's nuances to racism and talking about it, but you can't look me in my eye and just there's no way in my mind you can look me in my eye and say, I thought this was best for the country.
You know? For sure. It was definitely, I think that there was definitely the populist notion of this country. What's best for me? What's best for the majority of us? And this country, we found out, is a majority white male dominated country, and we hadn't had that type of voter turnout with that demographic in 30 years,
right?
And it took, because primarily, you know, I would say that traditional news broadcasters, they don't, and traditional candidates don't appeal themselves to that person.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And so we don't necessarily. That person always has to find their issue other ways and find their candidate other ways, more traditional ways. But, you know, Donald Trump definitely availed himself directly to that xenophobic fear.
Yeah, his weapons were fear and hatred and fear of change and ignorance. Like, those were his weapons, mm-hmm. and no one checked him on that.
And he weaponized, you know, that voting base.
And then this is another, I think I said on the podcast last night, this is what blows my mind about this. I think I said before, last year or last election time, Herman Cain, he had say what you want about him. I wasn't voting for the dude. But they made him come up there with our Morehouse brother. They made him come up there with a plan. He had I still know what the 999 plan is, right? And then they said, nah, to the, like, you know, like, this, I don't know what, we still don't know what his plan is.
Yeah, for sure.
We still don't know what his plan is.
People are just,
he said, I'm going to do this thing great. I'm going to do it quickly. I'm going to be like third grade adjectives on this. And that was enough. That was enough for this country and those same people to be like, I'd rather have that, like that. You know what I mean? And so I think it was like, I have no problem. Like, I have no problem if you're Republican or Democrat or whatever you are. But there's something deeply concerning about a country that chose to select a person who literally was just like, middle finger to everyone else. Join me in this thing. Middle finger to everybody who don't line up with me. You know what I mean? Like, you can't come up there now, and it's what's there's the cowardice, and I'm not a Republican, and so I don't.
But
I'll say this is the cowardice of that party that bothered me. So I'm watching Paul Ryan today get up there and talk about, you know, we hope the best for him, and we're gonna do this for him. You don't agree with what he's saying. You know what I mean? Or maybe you do, but like. To act like we're all stupid and we're just watching you flip flop and go back and forth, or to say something like, you know, we're gonna work hard with the other side. You know, this country needs to come together. It is divided. Well, who did it? You expect the Democrats not to try to do what you did to Obama for 8 years? You know what I mean? Where's the spirit of, you know, collaboration? You know, the 8 years ago.
Sure. You know what I mean? I think it's a valid point.
So like, what are you expecting American people to think? Like, we know, as if you're a person of color. Or you're a person in the margins, all this election did was I'm constantly paranoid. I don't know about, like, I walk around with a constant state of paranoia. All this did was confirm my paranoia is legitimate. That's all this election did.
Yeah, man.
And it's sad, but it's like, sad. How do you explain this? You know what I mean? How do you explain this?
I would like to try on this podcast because I think it is valuable to help people process it. But Adon, I want to get your thoughts, man.
It was tough, man. I kind of pull back on this often, like, because I don't particularly consider myself conservative, but I come like, but I have a deep respect for it because, let me back up. There are certain issues that I am conservative on, but I come from a family of life, like my father, my grandfather, lifelong Republicans. Like that's just the lineage I come from. This, you know, I woke up, I was in a writing session last night when kind of news came out about this and, about how he was gaining in the polls. And, when I went to sleep, it was almost like a foregone conclusion that he was going to win. I didn't stay up to like see the official, whatever. And when I woke up this morning, it was so weird. I felt like saying this, but I didn't want to like offend people on, you know, who are sensitive about this, but I felt like wondering if America could take a Plan B pill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I just like, could like America, could you please take,
come on,
could you please take a morning after pill? Like, yeah. Can you just reverse this decision you made last night? And that has nothing to do with, I won't say it has nothing to do with, but it has less to do with the like the ideas of Republican principles and conservatism that I have an issue with. It actually has to do with this embodiment representative that has been selected to the highest office in the land. It bothers me on a profound, deeply level that regardless of how you feel about him or his role in his operation of the role of office, it just fundamentally bothers me that on Inauguration Day, Barack and Michelle Obama will be on stage and they will peacefully transfer power over to this man who questioned his authenticity, mm-hmm. who was endorsed by the Ku Klux Klan. Like, I don't, there's like a moral reckoning there that bothers me on just a very core level. And it's kind of this weird snapshot of when you look at the amount of achievement and goals and expertise that in this case Obama has had to exercise and achieve in life to get to this point. Mm. And then you look at Donald Trump.
My goodness.
And Ivanka.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not addressing policy. I'm not addressing anything other than just like this hits at something to me. And I think that on the other levels of the idea of, yeah, I do think you do have a very strong point there, David, in which there's, if you're at a point where you can say, I know he's racist, but I know he's xenophobic, but I know he's misogynistic, but I know, and again, these are rhetorical questions, but they're actually not. Like, I mean these honestly, in which people need to ask themselves these questions because Trump won white women. Oh, like 53% yeah. of white women voted for Trump. Trump has said some of the most horrific things I could possibly think of. Mm-hmm. And absolutely something that we could not and you know, jumping away from the idea of like just addressing the world and the country as a whole, because everyone doesn't have the same moral compass, but Christians,
oh my goodness,
what do we say? Like, what do we say we're about? And again, that's not saying you had to then go vote for Hillary. Like, right. I'm not then saying like that's now your that's now the option you should run with. Because all the data that's shown us, like, third party voting did not lose this election. Like, voting for Gary Johnson didn't lose this election. People who voted for Jill Stein didn't lose this election. It literally is something that I think is just provides this profound snapshot that says, like, man, we feel very differently inconveniently about what we choose to advocate for this role and what we desire out of our leaders. Trump had a million less votes than Romney, but Hillary got 5 million less than Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of these questions that had kind of come up, just like some quick numbers, like on the issues of unfavorability, there were 60% of polled Republicans said, yes, we view Trump as unfavorable. He still got 15% of that 60% to come out and vote for him. 60% of the people who said he does not have a temperament fit to run the presidency, 20% of those people still came out and voted for Trump.
Right.
50% of the people who said he's unqualified for the position, 18% of those people still came out and voted for Trump. And all of this is what polling missed on the front end to say, like, man, if those gaps are too large, there's no, you know, there's no way that. So there's literally something in there that's where people are like, yeah, I know he's unqualified.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's unfit. You know what I'm saying? I know he's not favorable, but I'm willing to look past all of that and still give him this highest position in right. the land.
And what's the motive for that? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an option of one in their minds. Because a third party candidate's not going to win. And so many people would argue that they're throwing away their vote. I'm one that apparently did that. So I don't ascribe to that belief, nor do I believe it's logical, but people will make the argument that you're throwing your vote away. The other option then is Hillary. And I think that's where I can sympathize with the thought process, because in no way, shape, or form could I ever vote for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that very early.
Yeah. And a little bit of moral issue, a lot of bit of moral issue, doesn't really matter once you start to have a moral issue with someone. Do I have as much a moral issue with Hillary Clinton as I do Donald Trump? No, but I still have a very strong moral issue with Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I feel like she is part of the establishment. I know that's a Trump line, but I feel like she is. I feel like she is part of the big bank process of like controlling people, working behind the scenes, and really being part of the system, the political system that I think is broken. And I think that's what ultimately the number one thing people polled says they wanted change. Mm-hmm. And Obama, that's what he ran under. Mm-hmm. and Trump ran under as well. And so I feel like people looked at Hillary Clinton and said she's a criminal or a potentially she.
I don't even know if the criminal part was as strong as even just the establishment part.
Yeah, the establishment. She just, it feels like she has blood on her hands everywhere she turned at every step in her political career.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you get all the way into kind of the assassination, like conspiracy theory,
right.
but those exist because she has these kind of people who've looked at her life and kind of followed the bread trails and been like, man, there's something going on here between your nonprofit and the way you run things. It's just, it's not clean and it doesn't feel right. And so, and on top of all of that, I think a lot of people looked at a third term of Obama-isms and Obamacare and they said, no. Yeah. I can't do that.
And I think that's why I try to back away from the criminal part of it too, piece, only because while I know people say that, and I think that there are a lot of people who believe that and apparently will chant that, you know, lock her up and all of these things. I back away from it only because it's like criminality is not your issue here because you voted for Trump. You understand what
sure.
I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
like mm-hmm. there are crimes that have been committed by this man as well too, and some right. that are still pending.
He's literally under investigation.
Literally
right now.
Under investigation right now, and so that's where I know that that is actually a rhetoric used, and I know that that is even a belief espoused by people. But I back away from it just because I'm like, no, it's not the criminality piece. I can 100% see the anti-establishment piece, which gives this credence to like would Bernie have been a better running mm-hmm. person only because he taps into the populism part of it as well too, from the left side mm-hmm. as well, that Trump was able to galvanize. But it's here's what I get to also, which touches on a lot of these things, because I think with Trump, we look at the xenophobia, we look at the misogyny, we look at the outright racism, or at least the racist adjacentness of a lot of positions that he has. We look at the ethno-nationalism that he espouses. We look at, you know, political retribution, talking about first thing I'm going to do in office is appoint a prosecutor to lock her up. Like, just things that are very strange in terms of strange, meaning foreign to how we normally conduct business in the United States of political business. All of these things, what I thought was most interesting is that we look at it as these are bugs, right? These are deficiencies in the machine. Mm-hmm. People looked at that and viewed it as features. Hmm. They looked at these quirks and these things that we look at, even very sane Republicans, mind you, none of Republican establishment but was behind Trump. No. Plenty of them looked at him and said, this guy is absolutely unfit. I will either vote for Clinton, which is crazy for me to say, but I'll do that, or I will abstain my vote completely because he is so bad for the office. So we can't paint all Republicans with the same brush. Absolutely in that not, way, yeah. Right? But a coalition of people would look at these factors and say, man, these are problems. Others look like, no, that's what I like about them. Like, these aren't mm-hmm. deficiencies. These are advantages of this person. Mm. And that's what bothers me at that core, where it's this idea of saying, like, yeah, there are the level of voting that occurred from, like I said, I'm from Ohio, right? I think Clinton won 7 of those counties.
Right.
It was not close. Like, Trump got like 38, 39 of those counties. It was not even competitive in those ways.
And I think ultimately this is like my biggest problem with kind of how we ended up here. And I think it was a perfect storm of a lot of things. But I think one of the main things is Hillary was unelectable in a lot of ways in a lot of people's minds. So it gave some, you didn't have anywhere to turn. But in the Rust Belt, Trump basically flipped the Rust Belt from being a predominantly Democratic, like, wall, the blue wall, mm-hmm. and he flipped it and made it red, which is incredible in, like, electoral history that he was able to do that. And I think, unfortunately, he did it under the guise and the promises of a middle school class president that promises Kool-Aid out of the water fountain because he said, I'm going to
be pretty dope if I was in middle school.
Like, of course I'm going to vote for you. Right. Like, even if you kind of do something right. Like, yeah, that, right. Like,
just tinker with the water fountain.
Flavored water? Yeah.
Just put some dye in there. Yeah. But he promised to bring back manufacturing in a land or in those three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, into Virginia, were predominantly industrial states and founded on manufacturing, and they've been decimated, and he is promising to restore them.
Never saying how, though.
Of course not. But the problem is there's such desperation in this country, and those states have been so forgotten and so looked over by the Democratic Party, to be honest, mm-hmm. that it was just assumed. Like, Hillary didn't even do ground game in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
She just assumed it was going to go Democrat.
Yeah. There's a lot of assumption on the Democratic Party.
And so, and again, am I gonna blame shift this onto the Democratic Party? No, I think that I think everyone needs to stop right now. If you're listening to this, I'm talking to you. You need to own this responsibility. Each person needs to look at what happened and say, how did I have a part in this? And how can it motivate me to do things over the next 4 years so that all my greatest fears are not realized? Because what I believe to be true is that ultimately, like, Donald Trump is not going to win or lose the next 4 years for us. Like, we can sit here and talk about this, and I want to get into something that I've been wrestling with. But ultimately, what I know to be true is that we as people have the power to do something over these next 4 years. This election isn't dictating us an exact path over these next 4 years. And I believe that we can fight so that human rights are preserved, that people are valued, that that we as a country don't get lost in a money grab for power. And I think that that's a potential.
Yeah, it's partially, yes. I am at this point, and I like post on Instagram like this one of my favorite poets named Amir Suleiman, and he talks about like this piece called We Must Win, and it was just profoundly relevant for me today, just because in the midst of the despair, in the midst of all of this, like there's a level of like, no, like there's you know, it starts now. Like now's the time in which you start. And that, and I mean that on like either side of the aisle, like whether you are viewed yourself as liberal and progressive, or you view yourself as conservative, the work actually begins, you know what I mean, at this point. Like the election, all of this like draining election was what it was. I think though that what is kind of you know, what we didn't talk about as well, because the idea of, you know, in like the moratorium that you're talking, or not the moratorium, but in the memoriam that you're talking about like how these Rust Belt, right, states felt overlooked in ways. I found it interesting that they voted a referendum against the Democratic Party, right? But it ignores, right, that like 31 of the 50 states are governed by Republicans. Mm-hmm. Like 35 are Republican state-led houses. Like when we talk about what actually is affecting people on a day-to-day basis, it's a disingenuous argument, I feel, to when people present it as though the federal government and all of it has been destroyed by the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, the executive branch has this power and has wielded it in ways, but like Senate's been a Republican for some time now. Right. And the idea, like I said, that on the state level, there's not been out of power. Part of one of the things that, and, you know, not to jump into the weeds here with this, but like even with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever, like there's the argument which can go either way based off of how you want to discuss it. But like the argument is always like, hey, you know, Democrats will say this will work if you allow it to work. Republicans will say, well, this does not work because of how it's been enacted. Right. But realize all of these states had exemptions. Like there are plenty of states that have Georgia, including them, mm-hmm. who have opted out of some of these protections and these provisions with regards to way premium. And so I know that it's not been it's not saved me money. But there's a reason why things haven't saved me money, particularly for my particular position with that. But I feel like there's a lot of policy issues that fall along this way. And I just think that overarching it all, what I do think could work with Trump as a president, and which will be interesting to see, because, yo, it's complete control now, right? Mm-hmm. From the Senate, the House, executive. It's interesting now. It's like, okay, everything that y'all said he can do that you wanted him to do, like,
here we go.
All right, what's stopping it now? So
he's got to confirm his cabinet, will be
right.
Could be potentially problematic,
which is crazy, because then you're looking at the people who were surrogates for him, and it was something. And you're just like, oh God, Giuliani, Christie, yeah. Ben Carson, and you know, and then you start to wonder also about like, okay, well, is you know, what are you giving over this control to Pence? You know what I mean? Like because you essentially were promising earlier that like your vice president would be the strongest VP in history, right? Because mm-hmm. you didn't have this control. And then you start to go, then you have to dig into Indiana and say, mm-hmm. like, how successful has Indiana been on some levels, right? There's some pros there, there's some cons there. And I feel like, I'll end on this point. I feel like the other piece of it is this too, is that like, I think that George W. Bush performed a lot of presidential overreach, right? And like strengthened the part of the executive branch.
Right.
Obama came and also did that as well too. Mm-hmm. Arguments being that McConnell from the very beginning said our number one job is to just not pass, not let anything that he wants to do happen.
Right.
And so
very cooperative.
you get into this place where it gets to this stalemate because the houses of Congress aren't working together. And then to do something, then the Democratic president just says, well, I'm just going to do what I can do, which is an executive order. But that's a problem because it's not that even if you trust Obama, right? Even if you do, the problem is that it sets a precedent for what that branch can do. And so now you sent this precedent that regardless of who's there, they now have the ability to do this. And so that's where it's like, man, now that Trump is here and the things that he's talked about doing, again, he has this pliable relationship to truth. Like, this man will lie and it will be a known lie. Right. Like, he would say, I did not say that. Here's footage of you saying that. No, I did not say that. Here's a tweet that you said that. I did not say that. I don't know what you do about that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what you do about that. I don't know what you do about your level of retribution that you have towards the media. Like, how do you, like, you don't like the free press in a way. Mm-hmm. And talking, you know, you want to ban CNN. And like, I don't know, y'all. Those are the things that make him like frightening in that way that I think go outside the pale of any partisanship that you stand on. It's just like, this is just a problem.
Right.
And this is why I am torn right now. Because as a conservative my whole life, like, on one hand, this is like the perfect scenario. Like, just like you described, like, this is a scenario that I've never seen.
I think like 1928 was like the last time. Yeah.
So potentially, you know, I'm hardcore fiscally conservative, socially liberal, in how I go about kind of processing politics. And but honestly, this is an opportunity for the bureaucracy and a lot of the things that I see I think are wrong with the way the government is run, to be slimmed down and to kind of become the conservative government that everyone has espoused instead, if possible, mm-hmm. if we ever achieve this, like, this is what we could and we're about to find out, and potentially we'll swing to the other extreme after this, but ultimately I'm torn because you have this idealism, right, of this great moment, but unfortunately the leader of this moment is Donald Trump. And I was explaining it to my wife, because she was like, how do I process this? Like, because, you know, she just doesn't live in politics. She doesn't want to or choose to, and I wish I had that ability.
Yeah.
But I was like, the problem is this, as you try to, like, dialogue with people, that the best case scenario for Donald Trump is a decent scenario where he hands over power to people who know what they're doing and they legitimately get things done. Are people going to be frustrated? I'm sure. He's going to repeal Obamacare in the first 100 days. And that's going to put, what is it, like 40 million people or 27 million people that...
27 million.
Who currently have...
Gained insurance.
Insurance from Obamacare. There is a... And I don't want to get on the rabbit trail of Obamacare. Me and Doc Beats are going to talk about it tomorrow. Okay. So you guys can tune in for that. But best case scenario is there's a lot of, you know, a conservative run government that is for the people, by making the government small and giving people freedom.
Right.
Tagline, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The less laws you have, the more free the people are.
Right. Billboard material of conservatism right there. Mm-hmm. The problem is this. That is best case scenario. More than likely, we are going to live in some gray area between that and the worst case scenario, which... Unfortunately for us, it's a fascist reality in this country, and that it scares like the hell out of me. And I'm so torn because on one part of me is like, we are like the conservative political piece of me is like, man, we have this great experiment that's about to happen, and then my logical mind steps in and is like, and we are literally like cutting the wires of an atom bomb, watching this experiment take place, and people could potentially lose their rights on levels that we have never experienced. Like, I'm fighting for ultimate freedom in this country, but we could very easily, if we misstep at all in this process, or Donald Trump doesn't listen to his advisors or goes
or
off on one
the
of
the wrong advisors
right.
to begin with. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. We could, you know, pat downs. What, like,
like what Omarosa gonna get? I'm concerned. Like, where are they going to put Omarosa at?
Right.
I'm not happy about that. I'm not happy that Omarosa is about to get a cabinet position.
Oh my goodness. As we look at this, I love how, like, there's a lot of talk about the policy and stuff like that. As someone who's just a day-to-day just person, I'm like, I can't shake the fact of, like, he in his efforts to become president, he unlocked Pandora's box. He unleashed a group of people a voice in this country that was kind of silent, or it was dormant, and now there's a confidence there that on a day-to-day basis is just scary. You know what I mean? The people that he's like, we've lost a lot of just basic civility in politics.
Sure.
Like, just how people respond to people in politics because of what what people have just been okay with him saying. Right. And I'm like, I'm like, this, you just gave so many people encouragement to just be the worst. Like, he appealed to the worst in America.
Do you feel like that in any way? Because did you listen to his acceptance speech?
Yeah,
I did.
Like, what did you think of his acceptance speech?
I think someone wrote it. I think it was a thing that had to be. It was the best speech that he could have given. Right. For me to be like, able to, like, get any sleep that night. It was like, all right, he said the right words. However, we found out with him, what he says could change. He could come back. I never said I was going to cooperate. I never said I was everybody's president. And then we just have to deal with that. Yeah. You know, like, that was to me. OK, that was one of my biggest issues. Another one. And I think we're all believers here. This is what blew my mind and is going to continue to blow my mind. Is, and hopefully this changes as we go on, but the alignment with the church, or a lot of the church, and the right is the most, and then to fuse them with Donald Trump is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. This, you know, like, it's.
I know why, but why?
What?
Why is it? Why does it not make sense? Because I want you to articulate that for people, because there's some people listening that white evangelicalism and right wing politics.
Yeah.
Go hand in hand because of abortion, a singular issue. But why does it not?
So first of all, the idea that how does Donald Trump 60 whatever, it doesn't matter,
70
however old he is, the idea that 70 some year old billionaire has not once ever participated in an abortion in some way, shape, or form is silly. It's silly. No, like, not even to be funny, but just he's the same billionaire who's cheated on all of his wives. Right? Not the current one, but he stepped on all his wives, multiple children, different women, all this other stuff, right? No, he's everyone knows about his sexual escapades and all. You mean he's never once participated? So you think that's your champion of abortion? That's the guy that's gonna repeal abortion? That's the guy? You know what I mean? Like, common sense. Like, you're aligning yourself with you're not aligning yourself with Christ at all at this point. You know what I mean? You're not trying to. You're aligning yourself with the
I think the argument espoused is that that none of us are Christ, and that he, although flawed, gets you closer to the values that you know that those conservative in the church would espouse, you know? So I think that would be the argument that that has been posited out there. Right. I think, like, I'm not sure if it was James Dobson who has still rolled hard with them, even after, you know, the bus gate and all of that and everything like that.
Rocks.
Certainly Jerry Falwell Jr. And various political, you know, various, evangelical leaders of what would be known, maybe 15 in the 90s as the moral majority or whatever. Mm-hmm. They would just articulate this position to say that, like, we're all fallen, and, you know, God is the one who actually places our leaders in front of, you know, and so
divine right ruling.
Yeah. And so I think that is their position. I think that's the position that some people take with that.
I just look at the hypocrisy of of those people.
So
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a line drawn in the sand now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw more the what I saw today on Facebook, if any indication of anything real, was I had more of my white friends saying I can no longer be labeled as a white evangelical. Mm-hmm. I am literally pulling that card out of the deck with when it comes to me. I won't ascribe to that. I won't call myself that. I literally am no longer that. Yeah. And a lot of them didn't like qualify with I'm still a follower of Jesus. It was very uncomfortable for me because I was like, oh, like, but at the same time, that's the consequences of politicizing your religion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that you literally will ostracize the people that don't like the. I think it's just as troubling for the white, you know, Christians in this world that they're the politics and religion, they exist hopefully in harmony, but they aren't one in the same. And I feel like nationalism has become the religion of the right. And that is the religion of Christian suburbia. It is comfort. It is, espousing, plenty. It is a prosperity.
Yeah.
And it espouses right wing politics and conservative politics. And again, that's not to say that conservative politics are inherently evil. They just become that when they become your religion.
Yeah. We talked about this before. Anytime you have an intermingling of the faith and the empire.
Yes.
That's where we see the issue, right? Like it is, you know, Christianity is not something that historically has thrived in, you know, it's historically thrived under persecution or in the margins. And that is where, you know, it's almost, I'm really big, you know, with the idea of like, of things being, drilled down for potency. Like just in general, and that's like where the idea of like my group, The Remnant, came from, right? It's like about the strength in the smaller numbers, and you know the idea of, you know, whatever that may be, like everything from like pot liquor itself, you know what I'm saying? Like it's the idea of like the things that have been kind of left on the margin, that there's being strength there. And so ultimately, like our faith, when found to be wedded to political parties, to the American empire as it is, you see this dilution and you see this grabbing of it and advocacy of it in dirty hands, right? And used for political means and so to what you were talking about, Dan, right? I do think that's an interesting place to find that tension of, man, the conditions are set up for what I desire, but the framework is built upon this head of what essentially amounts to fascism, right? Like, because of who this person is. And the thing is, and this is what we're talking about, the thing is, after Trump leaves, we've just set a precedent for whoever is in there, because you could get the opposite results of what we have now on the other side of it, and just be like, but damn it, we did it already with Trump. So why can't this happen this way too? And it's a frightening thing. I will say, and just so that we don't like dwell in this place of despair, I do think, so here's other options that could possibly happen, right? Because you were talking about like what may occur and what might not occur or whatever. You know, Trump has had such a, what, I don't know how to describe it, but just a very loose, to be kind, relationship with truth itself. You want to talk about some of the things that he's proposed, and a majority of his proposals, honestly, they've either been unadvisable or like implausible. Mm. Honestly, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of
let's put some people on Mars.
It's like, we're just gonna build a wall. What are we actually going to do with, like, how are we going to do this? What's going to happen?
We're going to make them pay for
trust
it.
Trust me.
All of that. But, you know, what could happen in terms of efficiency for him is, and this might be of heart for our conservative listeners and people, like, what could happen is he, because he clearly what bothers me as well about him is he just wasn't unprepared, but he doesn't have a curious mind to prepare himself. And that bothered me. Like, it would be like, yo, man, like I think Newt Gingrich, I disagree with a lot of stuff he says, but I always know he's thinking. Like, he's always like, I respect his mind, even if I find, even if I have found some of the things he's espoused as problematic.
Right.
That being said, like, what could happen is Trump becomes this kind of this dispatch, right, of ready-made, already done, like, Republican bills that are just like, hey, we're just waiting to go drafted through committee already. Like, hey, I've been waiting to get this. And it goes to him. He's like, oh yeah, let's just run it through, 'cause I have no plans. I just ran on, kind of just bullshitted my way through this thing.
Yeah.
I have no plans. So, I just need something that makes it look like I'm productive.
Yeah. You know I'm playing golf later this afternoon.
Yeah, honestly. Because for the longest time, I was like, this dude actually doesn't want the job. He just wants to win.
I'm still surprised he took the pay cut.
Yo, it's not a game. Like, so there's that part of it. Like, so that could very well happen, right? Where you have kind of some of the more efficient members of Congress, Republicans, who just have bills ready to go. And yeah, you could, you know, so that might be something. I do think what I also would want to bring out too, though, is because as we're talking, there are protests that are occurring right now, against, you know, kind of expressing their displeasure, their you know, dislike, hatred of the fact that of this Trump presidency, and they're occurring in various parts around the country or whatever. I actually know one that was planned in Atlanta for tonight, but it's been pushed back for logistical reasons. But Dan, you were also talking about what the issue that you had with that was.
Yeah. And again, like, there's after every president is elected, right, the party that loses typically kind of calls to its constituency and says, hey, we need to give this next president a chance. McCain did it. He espoused the Republican Party after Obama was elected. Like, hey, we have to get behind him. We have to be cheering for him. Obama did it today. Said, hey, we are now cheering for Donald Trump. We are cheering for his success. And so it's a little problematic to me to understand, you know, I understand that there's frustration, and again, rightfully so. I do think that, unfortunately, media, again, is boiling the issue down to a singular race issue, a singular whatever issue, when in fact it is how Donald Trump was elected is far more complex. Is there a race component into this? Absolutely. But it's not the totality of the situation, and doesn't explain how we got here, or doesn't help us necessarily move on in whole. Can we address that one issue? Sure, absolutely. Do we need to? Absolutely. But I feel like it's kind of we've stirred the pot and said, hey, be frustrated about this and let's protest this thing. And to me, it's a little bit like Donald Trump is our president. There is no amount of marching, protesting that is going to change that. I do think if that's how you need to get your frustration out and you need to be heard, we have this podcast. You want to march down the street? Awesome. I think you have that right, and it should be given to you. I don't understand because in my frustration, I am actually now realizing, like, hey, it does send a message to those in power, like, hey, we are still very much ready to continue to fight for our rights individually.
Yeah, I think and I'll let you jump in right after this, but I think that is part of where I come down on it with, like, I feel as though, you know, what's interesting is that, like, that the people protesting, like, there's a bunch of white folks out there. Like, it's like there's some black people, but it's a bunch of white folks who are out there in these cities, right? And, you know, we can talk about the city urban rural divide that occurred with white voters, but I think that what that says to me, more, here's why I think protests are important. even though I agree that at the end of the day, you just got to work. Like, at the end of the day, you got to work. Like, it can't, the protest doesn't do anything if that's all it is. You got to put in the work, and the work being, you know, finding where you can work with administration at, and then also finding, holding on to your core issues and working to enact those on a local, state, whatever level. But here's why I think it's important is because, like, I know that, like, in 2000, I think, and I'm, the reason why I'm, I think about when the United States invaded Iraq, and I'm thinking about this really recently because I got back from D.C. a couple of weeks ago. And the last time I was actually in D.C., like D.C., like in the city, I was there literally that time that, like, I was there to watch them pull down Saddam's statue and all of that. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it'd been a minute since I'd been to D.C., which is crazy. But all of that is to say that I remember when all of this happened, when that happened. And then over time, right, as we realized, you know, or as it was, you know, uncovered in the media and everywhere, like, hey, there were no weapons of mass destruction. This was not actually connected to 9/11. We used this as a whatever. A lot of the rhetoric that came from the administration at that time was, well, hey, we couldn't foresee this. Like, we essentially, you know, the known knowns, unknown knowns, right. Like, we couldn't know this at this time. And the part of the protesting that makes it important is that, no, like, there needs to be representation visually, historically, that's analogued and archived to say, like, no, you can't lie later and say that this, that you just had support, that there was no opposition to this. Like, there needs to be some record, even if, like I said, it shouldn't stop there and that shouldn't prevent work being done. But there should be, like, you're going to have to look at, after the election in 2016, there were massive protests that broke out throughout the country articulating the displeasure with this as positioned bigot, xenophobic candidate, soon to be president elect, right? And that just needs to be recorded. Again, I don't think it should stop there. And I think my fear is that for some people, that's all it will be, right? Is that they will just continue to just be like, yo, I'm just get out on the street and protest. That's not going to do any good. Like, you got to work with the people who are put in office. And that was one of my largest critiques with, like, with some in the Tea Party, essentially just like being like, I don't like this, so I'm going to get elected to the role and then I'm just not going to do anything. I'm not going to pass any law. I'm not going to do any. I'm just going to stymie everything. I'm like, yo, that's not how this works. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, you were saying.
No, I was. So you were talking. There's a couple of things. You were talking about how the protest, Dan, and how, you know, Donald Trump is our president. And I think the best way to say this is when I've been on social media too, Twitter, Facebook, all that, and it's, I don't say it's not shocking, but it's just interesting that there's a calmness. Certain people are, it's just, there's no way about it. Certain people can have a calmness about this. You know what I mean? That I just can't have. Like, these people, they're processing, man, I think of it, but, like, people are scared. People are terrified. People are literally afraid that their way of life, and it, had he not said all of these things, you know what I mean, and just been a quote, like, had acted in the manner of maybe some established Republicans, no, I don't think there'd be this. But people are literally afraid because of the things that he said, and they're afraid that their life will literally, the life that they've known in America is no more, because, and you know what I mean, and, like, we've reverted back to things that we only read about in history books. So people, maybe protesting doesn't anything, but people are literally afraid that the person who this country has elected to represent us doesn't want anything to do with us, you know? And that is that fear can't be, like, maybe there's nothing positive to come, you know what I mean? There's nothing, no kind of, like, actual change that you can actually do, but, like, people are going to get together because they're literally afraid of this man who's been saying, God, you know, like, it's fear. It's fear. You know?
Yeah.
Fear is being mobilized now.
Yeah.
Like, and he did
on
that.
All sides.
Yeah, but yeah, he did that.
Yeah, and I think that's, man, I think that's the one thing that I feel like, as we, where do we go from here, right? Like, you know, I am a conservative hoping to find a place in this new post-Trump world, where I don't align myself with the party, but I also, yeah, I'm somewhere in this weird place. But I think the point is that I think as we go from here, we need to reach out and work with each other and mm-hmm. build things like Fourth District, where people who come from different backgrounds and think differently are having conversations and are pushing each other to think differently and challenging each other to wake up. I mean, Dave, you told a story in pre-show that like this is why we do what we do.
Yeah. I'm not gonna give names where, but just today, just getting a tweet from a young man who just said, a lot of my family is Republican. Everybody's pro Trump. And every time I say that, like, hey, this guy's, you know, scaring people, they're telling me I'm brainwashed, whatever, whatever. And he just thanked me for just, you know, being a part of this mm-hmm. and kind of helping him to understand why I saw these things as a problem. Mm-hmm. And I was texting a comedian friend of mine earlier and just talking about how, like, wherever you're at, like, we can't afford to just be in our bubbles anymore. Like, we cannot afford, like, I do comedy where I do comedy on purpose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Sure. It's not an accident where I'm at where I'm at.
Right.
I know why I'm there. Because and I why I do the things I do, because of a tweet like that. You know what I mean? Or just literally, I was talking to another friend of mine who, when Ferguson was burning, he was like, why are they doing this? And now we can able to have dialogue. Like, you have to engage people. And I think that whole, and this would be one of her biggest flaws, that whole basket of deplorables thing. Mm-hmm. Say what even if you believe it, you have to engage with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're gonna, you can't throw people off. We're stuck, guys. We're stuck. We're stuck together, you know?
And I think the future of this country is very bright. I'm not going to buy into this Donald Trump thing, because what I also know to be true is that 80% of the 18 to 35 voters did not vote for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It was over 35 that elected Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So what that says is that we have a generation of people that at least is grounded in this one belief that we are humans and we have value. Mm-hmm. Because that's what Donald Trump's candidacy didn't espouse. And that's my ultimate problem. And what I've learned at Fourth District, and because, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been the dude looking at you, Dave, and been like, I voted for Donald Trump, and you shouldn't be afraid, because, like, now you're fear-mongering other people mm-hmm. into also being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
The world's not going to end. Everyone's going to be okay. That could never happen. And the reality is it happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that at Fourth, that people's lives are taken from them as innocent people every single day, and our government is compliant and complicit in those things, and we as citizens of this country are compliant and complicit in those things. And so we have to build things like this that say no. And I guess, as even though there's a part of me that still, you know, wants to give the honeymoon phase to Donald Trump, like every other president is given, you have a chance, take office, your first 100 days, we will then find out what kind of president you're going to be. And I understand why most people are like, no, I'm not giving it to you. But I'm torn between wanting to give him that and find out what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, yeah, totally understanding, like, we need to build things that say no, that we know people have value, and help people to help process all of this. Because this is, like you said, I didn't wake up and have to explain to my kid why Donald Trump was elected president. I'm not a parent in this world, yeah. And I'm not a minority in this world, or at least in this country. So
yeah, it's interesting. It's I'll say this, that, like, on some levels, I feel like I should blame Beyonce, which is strange to say, because I feel like
she was late.
Well, no, it just, like, you know, I feel like there's so many, there's things that happen. I'm just like, maybe if we gave that back, we, like, if she didn't take over the Country Music Awards, right? Like, maybe the backlash, like, I feel like there's some strange connection backlash that we just haven't dug through.
I felt like, I tweeted this earlier, I feel like this is a direct response to the OJ thing.
No, I'm saying, like, there's a bunch
the
of
made in America.
I have no idea, right? Like, I just feel like they were just like, you know what? They're taking over country music now.
Yeah.
We gotta give him Donald J. We gotta give him Donald J.
It's tongue in cheek. It is. I know it is, but it is tapping into something.
No, I'm dead serious.
Yeah, people, fear is the greatest motivator in this world, and people are afraid that they're losing their country, they're losing their grasp, their ability to succeed, and I think all of us desire that, and I think that's the shift, right? Is, yes, we all desire that we can be successful, but let's not be successful at the cost of someone sitting right next to us.
You know, it's funny, though, I was thinking about the other day, like, that's true, right? But we make, as Americans, we make these weird deals all the history of this country is these weird deals where we're like, all right, we're for these ideals. Well, what about us? Mm-hmm. You got black people. Well, all right, chill out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so the only way we have been able to get to where we're at is because there's always going to be people who aren't included. You know what I mean? Like, this country's
that's not just America, right?
Yeah, like,
it's definitely not just America.
It's definitely not. You're right. It's definitely not just America. But us being one of the most prosperous nation, yeah. Like it's just very evident, you know. But so we're like, oh, you have to have people, you know, who everybody should be, you know, equal or whatever. But it's like, well, then how does it work? How does this thing work if people are that way? You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was saying that particular Beyonce thing kind of tongue in cheek, but kind of not, just from the perspective of, I do believe that like ethno-nationalism is a very real thing. And I feel like, you know, this idea that every ethnic group should have its own country, right? And that nativism viewed as, which is strange, but white American feel as though this is my native land, right? Which is bizarre because it's not, but that is like that is what has come out of this idea of, or rather that's what's been tapped into by those alt-right who tap into this idea of make America great again. When they hear that again, they go, mm-hmm. This is what we're going back to, is this idea that I don't have to feel threatened by a minority encroaching on something that on some level I believe is mine, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that.
And whether that's the rational fear or irrational fear of terrorism, mm-hmm. or the subconscious fear of the African American male walking down the street.
Yeah. And or even just, you know, cultural identity. Something like when you turn on a television and you're like, what are all these minorities doing on, you know, in prominent places that like they should not be a standard. I'm the standard. Hmm. And the fact that this standard is now being upturned and replaced or altered or shifted in any way that suggests that I am not the mold, right? I am just a part. I am like everyone else, or and that's the thing, like when you are no longer the standard, then you feel threatened, right? That's mm-hmm. like these people, you've grown accustomed to this idea that I am the default, and the moment I'm not the default, now all of a sudden I'm on the verge of extinction. Mm-hmm. And it's this weird, like, you can't find any happy medium that, like, you go from 100 to zero that quickly. It's bizarre. But I do think that actually played into it. And so that's where it's just like, man, this. So what I was leading up to is like my friend texts me, and, you know, we're coming to the end here. But my friend texts me and was just like, was in your eyes, he's like, in your eyes, was the Obama presidency worth it? Mm. Like, and I just looked at it, I was just like, yo, I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally, and I just sat, I was like, I don't know what to say. She was just like, was it worth, like, getting him, and again, this is not my full endorsement of his policies. This is just literally getting that symbolic nature. Yeah, like I said, my nephew only knows a black president. Yeah. Like, that's all he ever conceives of. That's an amazing thing.
Vote for a white president. I've never done it before.
See, that's crazy. Yeah, yeah. Like, that's his point of reference. And she's like, would you trade that in now knowing what you got after that? And And, you know, I told myself, just because I'm on, and it might be blind faith, but I told myself, like, because I'm on this side of the Trump presidency, I told myself, like, yeah, I would. Because I at the end of the day, like, the cultural value in good that my nephew now thinks of in terms of possibility wise, mm-hmm. there's no limit to him in a way based off of what he sees out there. And so I have to approach whoever is in this office, whether it was Clinton, whether it was Trump, whether whomever, I have to approach it saying that, in the words of our great prophet Kendrick, we're gonna be all right.
Gonna be all right.
You know?
And I wanna just say, from the historical standpoint, Trump very well could be the worst president to ever hold the office. The presidency, though, is marred by terrible men that have held that office.
Mm. True.
Let us not, like, make the mistake to think that, like, one man can destroy this republic or this democracy, because if that's possible, it would have happened under Herbert Hoover, or it would have happened under Taft.
No, I was about to say, don't you bring Taft into this. I just like to... I just like to rep Taft, because no one reps Taft.
You got to bring him up. Yeah. Bring him. But, like, there's been corruption. There's been just incredible, brokenness in this country. The office of president has not been spared from that brokenness.
Yeah.
And so, and that trend continues.
Yeah. It is what it is.
And so, my deepest hope and prayer, And I feel like my responsibility now is to pray that Donald Trump understands the idea of the presidency, and he, you know, and steps up to the plate,
yeah,
and says, this is what a president is. I need to be this. Hmm. We'll find out if that's even an idea or a problem, or that's even a possibility.
Yeah.
But it's happened in past. There was a story on... Some guy on CNN was telling this story. He was talking about Brexit, but I guess he was talking about, can Donald Trump be presidential? And he's talking about one of the archbishops of Canterbury. Before he was appointed to be the archbishop, he was like kind of this rebel rouser, drinker, and someone just was like, hey, this will be good for you. And they put him in this office. Didn't deserve it. Shouldn't have been in it. And he ends up becoming a martyr for the faith after the fact. And I'm hoping that we get 2.5 years down the road before we start talking about the next election, and we can look back and say, you know what, it hasn't been perfect, but it hasn't been as bad as it could have been.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, yeah, I don't know if that's gonna, yeah. if that's a fair no, way to go
be
about hopeful. It.
You got that's all you got.
You gotta be hopeful. I mean,
yeah, we could keep talking about this, but I have a feeling it won't be the last time we talk about this. So we'll just put a cap on it here. Yo, anybody, let's do Stu's scratches of the week. I've not thought of this at all.
Yeah, we're gonna get it going. I should know her name, but she's like the girl that like holds down Fox News, not like the hardcore Trump supporter, but
Megyn Kelly.
Maybe she was on like Good Morning America Today, or she's like the main girl. She like talked through basically the whole night, kind of emceed the whole
thing. Probably, yeah. Megyn Kelly.
She did an incredible job of holding down Fox, like a channel that says like we are the right wing voice. Mm-hmm. She did an incredible job of articulating like why people would be fearful or upset and talking through that, like as a woman, talking about the hard parts, and she didn't gloss over the heartache that a lot of people were feeling last night. So shout out to her.
Yeah, she was, you know, of course, famously on the outs. Yeah, yeah, she was on the outs with Trump. So
yeah,
she definitely had that outsider perspective to provide with that. But that's good to hear. I didn't watch any of that footage. Just I didn't watch any footage. But but that's good, dope to hear. What you got?
Man, scratch of the week. It was going to be Chappelle, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I guess it was, but you got to come up with something else.
Got to come up with something else. You know what? I'll go, you're going to hate this one. Scratch of the week, shout out to my Atlanta Hawks beating the undefeated at the time Cleveland Cavs. Just adding more to the Cleveland eight right now.
Oh man,
we did it. That was our championship. That was our championship. So
hey, y'all went to Cleveland too and did that.
I know. Yeah, I didn't see it happen. I'm like, what if we won? I was like, this is the greatest win ever.
That is so disappointing. but no.
It's so early in the season. We're gonna be terrible.
It's all good. No, I'm. You know, I've been in Atlanta now for some years. So like, if I weren't rooting for the Cavs, I would. You know, I'm always happy to see Atlanta win.
Oh yeah.
Just not at our expense.
Understandable.
Yeah. Man, I threw out the scratch of the week because I thought that would give me time to figure out something.
I came quick too.
You did. I thought I was going to
take more time.
I'll ask you this, and maybe this could be your scratch of the week.
Yes.
So, artist creator threat.
Okay.
Who is this? I like this.
Oh, this is man. That's a good one. That is so. You're. This is why I
did it.
This is why I mess with you, Dan. Shout out to Dopesiety, which is a company out of New Orleans. Connected with them at the Afropunk stop here in Atlanta. They basically do a lot of avant-garde wear, like kind of streetwear, but shirts and book bags and all stuff like that. And so they are super dope. I'm not sure if they're husband and wife or just maybe boyfriend, girlfriend, or maybe not even dating. I don't even know if
Awkward.
A guy and a girl running.
It is a guy and a girl running it, but they are super dope. They pop up at a lot of different spots across the country, but it's Dopesiety, Dopesiety, I believe is how it's spelled.
I'm sure,
but
if you put it in Google, you'll find
it. Because I don't know if I spelled that right, but
it's super dope stuff.
Yeah, man, super. They're really really fresh. And it's just. It's really big, and you know, and that segues as well to just this larger idea that, you know, as we approach the holidays, like, I'm really big in terms of like cooperative economics. I'm really big in terms of like shopping local, and shopping within your community, circulating that dollar. And so I will strongly just as we've gotten on the other side of Halloween and we are officially in fall and approaching the holidays, just keep in mind, like, do not let materialism like overtake your life, and really just focus on the important things, and support the people around you, because these are the people that you see on a day-to-day basis, honestly, man, or like you encounter in your actual neighborhood, in your life, you know. And so bring corporations down to their knees. Also, I want to shout out Dan Duncan because he got through this whole joint and did not say V for the Vendetta once.
That's amazing.
I was like, yo.
Yeah, I was waiting.
Yo, they are losing this drinking game at home because I know. I know they were waiting for it.
I almost did.
Bravo.
Yeah. But I kept it in because.
If you were ever going to drop it, like, I was like, yo, now's the time. But
I tweeted about it. Okay. Maybe I got it out of my system.
Yeah, but yo, man, this was off the record. I don't know, you know, I don't know if we talked too long about it or whatever, but I think there was just a lot to talk about and a lot of things we still haven't addressed. We're still processing it, but please hit us all up on 4th District. Definitely check out all the other dope podcasts that are running and the other great pieces that are up there. And we're gonna be back soon.
Yep.
All right,
peace.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. Off the record, off the record.
Yeah.
I'm putting on for the record. Y'all been waiting for a minute. Now I'm back.